chapter 6. It was strange that at the very moment Gonf and Martin were discussing Corrin, the council of that name was talking of them. Ben Stickle's humble home was crammed with woodland creatures, the largest of whom was a badger, Bella of Brockhall. She presided over the meeting. Also present were the skipper of otters, Lady Amber the squirrel chief, Ben Stickle, and Billum, a dependable mole who was deputising for his leader. Seated by the fire, Beach the squirrel answered council questions.
Where did you see Gonf captured?
Westerly, over near the fringe by Kittir.
Whatever was Gonf doing to let himself get captured?
Oh, the usual skylarking and fooling about.
You say it was two of a dog as soldiers?
Aye, no doubt of that, in uniform and carrying spears.
Where were you when all this took place, Beach?
Sitting up an old oak not far off.
Did you hear what they said?
Heard him say they was taking him off to Kittir. Of course, you know Gonf treated it like a big joke, he did. No doubt they will have wiped the silly grin off his whiskers by now down in old Green Eyes' cells.
Lady Amber nodded at Beach.
Well done. Anything else to report?
No, ma'am. I followed them as far as I could, then I spotted Argalore perched in a spruce. Couldn't say if he was awake, so I decided to come back here, knowing there was a gathering of Corrin.
Ben Stickle winked at Beach.
Aye, it's late noon, too. There's about a spring vegetable soup, cheese and nut bread. Do you think you could manage some, Beach?
The squirrel winked back at Ben, bobbed his head respectfully to the Corrin leaders, and was gone before further questions could be thought up. Bella rubbed huge paws across her eyes and sat back with a grunt of despair.
Oh, well, here's another pretty pickle our mouse thief has got himself into. Any suggestions?
Amber clucked disapprovingly.
If I had my way, I'd leave the silly creature to stew his paws in Kittir a while. That'd teach him a lesson.
There were murmurs of agreement. The skipper of otters whacked his rudder-like tail against the hearth.
Belay that kind of talk, mates. You all know that the little ones would have gone hungry many a time, except for the thief.
Skipper gave a good-natured chuckle.
That Gonf is my kind of mouse. A true messmate. A bit light of paw, but good-hearted and an able-bodied shanty singer.
Ben Stickle raised a paw.
I vote we rescue Gonf. We'd be ashamed to call ourselves two woodlanders, leaving one of our own in Kittir prison.
Billum lifted a velvety paw.
Do my vote count? We'll gaff a formals not year.
Bella thought for a moment while they all digested the meaning of the rustic mole speech.
Of course, Billum. After all, you are Formel's deputy, and the Corrin respect your judgment as a sensible mole.
Billum squinted his round eyes with pleasure at the compliment. By a show of paws, the vote to rescue Gonf was unanimous. There was a temporary respite for refreshment, while the assembly helped themselves to bowls of Goodwife Stickle's famed spring vegetable soup, fowls of warm nut bread, and ripe yellow cheese. Lady Amber smiled fondly at two little hedgehogs, who were trying to look very fierce and brave. Knowing that she was always ready to recruit warriors into her band, she dealt with them as if they were two bold squirrels.
Show me your paws. You'll probably make good climbers after some training. You certainly look tough enough. Goody, are these two young villains very strong?
Goodwife put down a ladle and wiped her paws on her apron.
Oh my, yes. Ferdy and Cox are two of the strongest. Why, you wouldn't believe your eyes if you saw these two a-gathering up all those great heavy dishes and washing pots. There's no two hogs more powerful.
Much smiling and winking was in evidence, as Ferdy and Cogs gathered bowls, grunting with exertion as they proved their strength by scouring a large cauldron between them. Buckling down to the business of Gonf, the Corrin set about planning his escape. Argilor had returned to Mossflower. No creature could say why he had deserted his mountain stronghold in the far west. Maybe it was that he enjoyed the comfort of woodlands, where prey was far more plentiful. Argilor was a golden eagle of great age. He had grown too slow and short-sighted to pursue small creatures, so staying within handy range of Kittir and Vadoga's troops suited him. But the frightening strength and savagery of an eagle had not deserted Argilor, and if the chance of a larger animal came his way, he took it with curving talons and fierce hooked beak. Ferrets, rats, weasels and stoats made good eating, and besides, there was a pine marten living in Kittir. Admittedly, it was a bit battered and bent, but Argilor had never tasted pine marten before and was determined that one day he would do so. The eagle and the wildcats had crossed trails many times over the years. Each had a healthy respect for the other, with the exception of Sarmina. Whenever Argilor was sighted circling the sky over Katir, Vadorga's daughter incited the soldiers to fire arrows and throw stones at the great bird, offering rewards to the creature that could bring him down. Argilor was not unduly worried by a mob of vermin loosing missiles at him, as he could outdistance anything they chose to throw. Sometimes he would hover on a thermal, slightly out of range, trying with his failing eyesight to catch a glimpse of the desired marten, or Sarmina, whom he hated. Bright spring sunlight warmed his wings as he wheeled above the fortress. Ashleg cringed behind his wildcat mistress as she stood glaring up at the soaring eagle.
Shoot, you fools! Not over there, idiots! There, see, right above your thick heads!
The soldiers continued firing without success. Sarmina grabbed a particularly slow ferret and cuffed him soundly about the head. Hurling the smarting creature to one side, she picked up his bow and notched an arrow to the string. Taking careful aim, she paused a moment as the eagle swooped lower. Swiftly she loosed the barbed shaft with a powerful hiss of flighted feathers. To the surprise of the watchers, Argilor wheeled to one side, then shot upward in pursuit of the arrow. Up he went until the shaft had reached its peak of flight. Then, wheeling quickly inward, the eagle caught the arrow in his talon and contemptuously snapped it. Zooming downward, he flew low enough to stare for a second at Sarmina. Then he beat the air with massive wing strokes, flying away into the blue yonder. Sarmina would have vented her rage upon Ashleg, but he had vanished inside when he saw the eagle diving.
Get out of my sight, you useless lot of buffoons!
The soldiers followed Ashleg with all speed, each trying not to be last. Sarmina was in the mood for making examples. The wildcat stood alone, pondering a question. Where had she seen that same look of vengeance and fearlessness before? The mouse, that was it. She could not even recall his name. Anyhow, he probably hadn't lasted the winter down in the cells. Sarmina watched the furtive figure coming across the parade ground, ducking and weaving, flattening itself in the shadows. She snorted scornfully. It was only Fortunata.
Frightened of a blind old eagle, vixen.
Milady, I was ducking the arrows and stones of your soldiers as they came down. But that was a good shot of yours,
Fortunata said in a fawning voice.
A pity that the eagle caught it in midair.
The vixen jumped sharply to one side as Sarmina fired an arrow from the ferret's bow. It landed where her paw had been a moment before. Sarmina notched another arrow, her eyes glinting cruelly.
Right, let's see what you're best at, fox. Catching arrows or getting inside with a civil tongue in your head.
She bent the bow back and giggled wickedly at the sight of Fortunata beating a hop-skip retreat. Sooner or later, the Queen of the Thousand Eyes had the final say in all things. Something rattled through the slit window above Martin and Gonf. In the semi-gloom, they groped about in the straw until Gonf found the object. Martin could not conceal his disappointment.
Goodness me, a stick! How helpful! We could take this place single-pawed with a stick. What a useful thing to send us!
It was not a stick. Gonf ignored his cellmate and set about undoing the thin wire which bound the bark parchment to the slim blade. He unfolded the parchment and moved into the light, where he read aloud the message it contained.
Gonf, here are your tools. Leave by the woodland side of Katir at the first light of dawn. We will be waiting to cover for you. Corim.
Gonf laughed quietly as he destroyed the message.
This is what we've been waiting for, matey. Of course, they don't know about you. The plan's only supposed to cover my escape. But don't worry, we'll sort it out. The council will be glad to have a real trained warrior on their side. Now, do you see this silly old bit of wire and this little knife blade? Well, they're going to get us out of here, matey. These are the tools of an honourable thief.
Martin clasped Gonf's paw warmly.
I'm sorry, Gonf. All I did was stand here making stupid remarks. You are the expert. From now on, you have an assistant who is willing to learn from your experience. In fact, you've got a real mate, matey.
Gonf laughed and winced at the same time.
Right, old matey. The first lesson is not to break the expert's paw by crushing it, because you don't know your own strength. Let's settle down now. When's the next guard patrol due?
In about an hour's time. Regular as clockwork since I've been here. After that, There'll be nobody by until 2 hours after dawn, when they bring the bread and water.
Good. That gives us time for a little rest,
Gomph said, stretching out comfortably on the straw. Martin lay down, willing himself to relax against the flood tide of excitement building inside him. Gomph played on his flute a while. Then he began singing softly.
Pick-a-lock, pick-a-lock, you'll regret the day when you took a mouse thief and locked him away. Silly cat, look at that, it's 2 for 1. The thief and the warrior by dawn will be gone.
Martin lay with his eyes closed, listening.
Who taught you that song?
Gomph shrugged as he packed his flute away.
Nobody. They just spring into my head. Silly, isn't it? Sometimes old Goody Stickle says that it's Mossflower singing through me. Now and then she'll say it's a sight of seasons the sun hasn't yet shone upon.
Martin savoured the phrase as they lay in the straw.
A sight of seasons the sun hasn't yet shone upon, eh? I like that, matey. Your friends sound like nice creatures.
Gomph chewed on a straw.
You're like Goody Stickle. If I did have a mother one time, then she couldn't be any nicer than Goody. Wait till you taste her spring vegetable soup, or her oats and honey scones, piping hot and oozing butter, or her apple and blackberry pudding with spices and fresh cream, or just her new yellow cheese with hot oven bread and a stick of fresh celery. Aye, and a bowl of milk with nutmeg grated on top of it.
The straw slipped from Gon's lips. Martin was glad that he had dozed off. All that delicious mention of food had set his mouth watering like a stream. He was positive that he would like Goody Stickle. In fact, she would never be short of a constant admirer if her cooking was half as good as Gomph described it.